have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Now's the time to roll the barrel for the gang all here.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel. We've got the blues on the run. Sing a boom. Carraro, bring out a song of good cheer. Now's the time to roll the barrel for the gang's all here.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Tonight, we have two wonderful shows for you. We begin with one called Gangbusters. Gangbusters was on the air during the 1940s and actually started in the 1930s, ended in the early 1950s. We're going to listen to one of the last programs of Gangbusters, happened to be the 14th anniversary of this program. After that, we'll listen to my favorite, The Whistler. I think you'll really enjoy that too. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com and I'll be sure and answer them. Thank you so much for tuning in. And now let's enjoy our wonderful shows.
Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. Tonight, Gangbusters celebrates its 14th anniversary. Since its beginning in 1936, Gangbusters has presented over 600 actual police case histories and aided in the apprehension of over 350 wanted criminals.
Tonight, Gangbusters has asked the Honorable John C. Hilly, Assistant United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, to narrate tonight's case of the Golden Touch. Mr. Hilly.
Thank you, Roger Foster, and good evening, Gangbusters listeners. Tonight's case began rather inauspiciously late one night, not too many months ago, in a diner on the Lower West Side of New York. This diner was frequented mainly by dock wallopers from nearby piers and drivers and loaders from the nearby truck terminals. A wiry young man in work clothes was sitting at the counter over a cup of coffee when a heavy-set man walked toward the empty stool beside him.
Hello, Ralph. How's the coffee?
Oh, Victor. Hi.
Cup of coffee. Black?
Got you, draw.
Where you been keeping yourself, Ralph?
Been working.
Good. Glad to hear it. Where?
Woods trucking.
Yeah, doing what?
I'm checking loads. I gotta get back, Victor. See you around.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll walk part of the way with you.
What about your coffee?
The coffee here stinks. Hey, bud, forget the coffee, will you? You're looking great, Ralph.
Yeah, was feeling great, too.
After you, Ralph.
Thanks. I go this way.
I've been looking for you, Ralph.
That's so?
Yeah. Want you to get me a load.
Well, don't look my way, Victor.
I had enough, but I got everything set. I got a big buyer uptown, lots of dough.
Look, I like dough as well as the next guy, but I don't want to take another fall, so that's that.
Well, you won't take any fall. Nobody will take a fall. You get me a load of Scotch whiskey, we'll make a nice piece of change. A buyer will pay $25 a case for all we can get.
Look, I don't want to get jammed up again, Victor. It ain't worth it. I like breathing free air.
Well, think it over, kid, and let me know. Can I meet you someplace after work?
No, not tonight. I got to meet Dee Dee for a drink after.
Oh, date with a wife, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, Ralph, I'll be in touch with you. You think it over, huh?
But I don't...
Just think it over. You'll get 2.5 G's for doing nothing. So long, Ralph.
Yeah. So long. Petey, baby, I didn't come here to talk foolish. I came to enjoy a drink.
Look, Ralph, it stands to reason. You gotta get that load for Victor. What have you got to lose?
What have I got to lose? I'll tell you what I got to lose. Got another several years off my life to lose.
Has Victor taken a fall yet? Has he?
I ain't worried about Victor. I'm worried about myself. These FBIs ain't dumb, you know. Fucked all the liquor out of my terminal gets hijacked, I'll be the first guy they talk to.
So what good in talking get them?
No.
How do you ever expect to get anywhere in this world if you don't take a chance?
Say, listen, baby, whose side are you on anyway?
Has Victor been talking to you? To me? Why should Victor be talking to me?
How did he find out where I was? How'd he find out I was working again in a truck terminal?
But don't ask me. There are millions of ways of finding out those things if you want to find them out.
Yeah.
Ralph, I'm telling you, you're passing up the opportunity of a lifetime. It's like money in the bank. Victor already had the buyer lined up.
Oh, if I had any sense, I'd go right to the FBI with this thing. Right to the FBI and tell them all about it.
Now, wouldn't that be just lovely?
What I... Guess I got no sense.
Oh, Ralph, I knew you'd do it. I just knew it.
Special Agent Service talking.
Oh, hello, Mr. Service. I don't know if you remember me. You had me up on hijacking a couple of years ago.
What's your name? I'll remember you.
Well, that can keep for a minute, Mr. Service. Look, would you FBIs like to break up a hijacking before it starts?
I think we would. What's it all about?
Well, a certain party has come to me and asked me to line up a load of liquor. Now, I don't want to get jammed up again, Mr. Service. I'm clean. I want to stay clean.
Why don't you come here and tell me about it?
Oh, well, look, Mr. Service, how about City Hall Park, huh? City Hall Park in a half an hour.
Okay. But who is this?
Well, it's Ralph Sarek, Mr. Service. Remember?
Yes. Okay, Ralph, City Hall Park in half an hour. Hello, Ralph.
Oh. Well, Mr. Service.
Come on, let's sit down on the bench there.
No, no, I think we better walk.
Sure.
Maybe this wasn't such a good place to meet after all in broad daylight like this.
You don't think anybody's behind you?
I don't know about that. I wouldn't put it past Victor.
Victor Rossi?
Yeah, Victor Rossi. He's the one.
Hold it there.
Hey. Hey, taxi!
Where are we going?
We can talk riding around. Get in, Ralph.
Okay, yeah.
Head uptown, driver.
So it's Victor who wants you to get him alone.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Service. Ain't that good information for you? I always knew you wanted to make Victor.
This isn't a make, Ralph.
Well, isn't it? Tell me something.
Why didn't you get him alone?
Now, look, Mr. Service, I don't want to do any more time. I had enough in there.
Why didn't you just tell Victor no and forget about it?
Well, you know how it is, Mr. Service. By not getting him the load, I passed up a 2.5 G touch at least. I figured it... Well, you know, if the government's so anxious to get a make on Victor, to collar him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Ralph, I know what you mean. But the government doesn't pay out money to anybody unless they work for it.
Work? Work how, Mr. Service?
You find that load for Victor. We'll let him hijack it.
We will?
We will. That's the only way we'll get a make on him.
Oh, but, Mr. Service...
It's settled, isn't it?
Yeah, it's settled.
And keep your ears open.
Keep my ears open.
I want all the information you can bring me about the buyer. My boss wants the buyer as bad as he wants Victor. Worse than he wants Victor.
Yeah, the buyer.
Well, Ralph, how do you think you like working for the government?
It's going to be hard to get used to, Mr. Service. Awful hard.
Yes?
Me, Victor. Ralph.
Okay, just a second.
Well, Victor?
Well?
Got your load, Victor.
Yeah? What?
1,150 cases of scotch. How's that?
Well, that sounds all right. When's it coming in?
The ship docks tomorrow over in Jersey, Hoboken.
About to come over? Through the Holland Tunnel?
No, on a Cortlandt Street ferry. When something lands in Hoboken, we always bring it over on a ferry.
Well, it ain't much of a ride from the ferry up to your terminal. Yeah, we'll have to grab the truck on the ferry.
Hey, can you do that?
Well, sure, why not? How many men on a truck?
Two, driving a helper.
Yeah, that won't be any trouble. You're sure it's 1,100 and some cases?
Listen, I've seen a manifest.
Okay, Ralph, it's a deal.
10%?
10%.
Yeah. Is this one buyer going to take it all at $25 a case?
Every drop.
Can he handle it all?
Yeah, he's a big operator uptown. He's got a string of small clubs. He can handle it all right.
Do I know him?
What are you so interested in a buyer for?
Me? I don't know. I just want to be sure.
Sure of what?
Well, listen, I'm a part of this deal. I'm entitled to have the facts, don't you think?
I'm telling you the facts.
Okay, okay.
But don't worry about it.
Okay, I was just wondering.
Well, stop wondering. Everything's taken care of. Now, how about a drink on it?
No, thanks. I got to run along. I got to meet Dee Dee.
Oh? Well, have a good time.
Don't I always?
Now, give my regards to Dee Dee.
Yeah, I will. So long, Victor. You'll hear from me when I get the information.
All right, Ralph. I'll be waiting.
Yeah, tomorrow sometime. Just sit tight.
Yeah, yeah. Baby. Baby.
Is he gone?
Yeah, he's gone. Gone to meet you.
I forgot to tell him. I'm tied up.
You're a smart kid, Dee Dee. Roping him in like that when he didn't want to be roped.
I got a system, Victor.
Give me a kiss, baby.
No.
Come on.
Please, Victor.
Listen, what are you getting, Coy?
It's all part of my system. You'll get your kiss when I'm ready.
You're a smart kid. You're too smart for Ralph, huh?
You said it, Victor.
You're too smart for me. I want something, I want it. Now, come here.
Victor.
But I like you, baby.
I like you, too.
Too bad you're married to Ralph, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough.
After we make this touch, we'll get around to doing something about it. Okay?
Okay.
Well, Gangbusters listeners, that's how this case progressed. An FBI informant was in on the plans of the liquor hijacking as the conspiracy got underway. But even the best laid traps are in danger of springing too soon or snaring the wrong game. FBI agents of the New York field office had an informant planted in a ring of liquor hijackers. And as information came to him, Special Agent Larry Service brought it to his supervisor, John Humphrey.
John, Ralph just phoned. He said Victor took the bait. He'll go after the load on the ferry.
Good.
The buyer's supposed to be a nightclub owner. No information on the drop.
I wonder if Ralph knows his wife has been seeing Victor.
I doubt it.
What do you think he'll do when he finds out?
I'm just as worried about what he'll do if he doesn't find out. Whatever he tells Dee Dee's going to be relayed to Victor as fast as she can get there.
Yeah, I know, Larry.
He said he hasn't told a soul about his connection with us, but there aren't many secrets between a man and his wife.
Well, maybe we won't have anything to worry about. The touch will come off tomorrow.
John?
Yeah?
Ralph keeps warning me Victor might get rough with the drivers.
We'll take care of that, Larry. You and I are going to be the drivers.
Oh, that takes care of it all right, doesn't it?
Yeah. Takes care of it fine.
That drive onto the ferry's awful narrow, John. You sure you can wheel this trailer through there?
I'm going to try, I'll tell you that.
Where'd you learn to push one of these things, anyway?
Never even been in one until yesterday.
Oh, great. You're doing okay.
Take a look through that mirror, Larry. See how our friends are doing.
They're still back there. The car and all for them.
You got to enter Victor. He knows his business.
Hey, fire that rig on a boat!
Go ahead, John.
Yeah.
Watch this side.
Easy there.
Okay, go ahead. Not bad, huh? Not bad. I thought you were going to take a bulkhead with you.
Oh, no. It wasn't that close.
It was close enough. I'm telling you, I'm going to feel a lot safer in Victor's hands than I felt riding in this thing with you.
Keep your fingers crossed anyway. If he wants to be, he can be plenty tough.
You're telling me.
But if we're as meek as lambs, he won't bother with any rough stuff.
John, you never saw a meeker lamb.
Well, here we go.
Hey, John.
Hmm?
Over there. A couple of our men. Mac and James.
Good.
They're the ones who are going to tail the truck, right?
That's right.
Oh, that's a tough assignment. Thank goodness that didn't happen to me.
Come on, let's go out and get a smoke, eh?
Yeah,
I could use something. Go on.
Victor's boys are getting out of their car.
Yeah, looks like the moment.
Did you know that they were crying for help in the Bureau of Census, the Department of Commerce?
Is that so?
Yeah, I just happen to have an application here in my pocket.
Take out your pack. Give me a cigarette.
Oh. Here comes Victor. Yeah. Have a cigarette?
Thanks. Hello, boys. Nice day on the river, ain't it?
Yeah. Smells better today.
Now, listen to me. A truck of yours, I'm going to take it.
Huh?
Oh, you kid.
I got four boys standing around here. They all got guns and they're all itching for target practice. You understand me?
That's pretty plain.
So I'm taking the truck.
Oh, now listen.
Look, bud, I got nothing against you. All I want is that load. But if I have to kill you to get it, you're going to get killed. Now, you wouldn't want to die over a lousy load of scotch whiskey, would you?
You got a point.
Okay. Walk on back past your rig. There's a sedan there right behind it. Go on, walk.
Yeah.
He's in the truck.
Yeah, they're in there.
Okay. Keep watching. You're doing fine, boys. You got lots of sense. Okay.
Hey, look.
Get in.
Come on, Johnny. Won't get any place arguing.
Yeah, I guess I won't.
That's the attitude, boys. Now, here. There's some goggles for you. Put them on. Don't try to look out through them. It won't do you any good. The glass is painted over. So just sit there and relax. For relaxing, there's nothing like a ferry ride across the Hudson.
There.
Hey, Dee Dee, be careful with that coffee. It's hot.
You're lucky I don't pour it over your head.
What's the matter with you, anyway?
I just like to know why you're sitting here at 11 o'clock in the morning drinking your third cup of coffee when right now the load is being delivered to the drop.
Listen, baby, first of all, I worked at the time mill till 1 o'clock this morning, so I'm entitled to drink as much coffee as I want at 11. Second, I've done my part. Victor don't need me anymore. Besides, I don't know where the drop is. Pass the sugar.
Brother, are you small potatoes? Here.
I mean, I'm small potatoes. Don't throw things around like that.
You're the key man in the operation, and you get a stinking 10%.
Ain't 10% enough for you?
You want to know the truth? No.
Okay, do it out then.
What kind of a big dealer do you think you are? I don't need you, Mr. Small Potatoes.
Oh, now,
I can go where the big money is. Why should I wait around for you to get up a little nerve?
Dee Dee!
You're through, Ralph. And you don't know it.
Huh?
It's me and Victor.
Victor?
You heard what I said. Victor. It's been going on for months.
You're kidding.
Am I? We were just waiting for this touch to make it final.
Yeah? Well, you'll see how final it is. You'll see where Victor winds up.
He'll wind up three notches above you.
Yeah, you can go visit him in Atlanta. You...
Where?
Oh, come on, Dee Dee. Sit down and let's be like a man and wife should be.
Where did you say I could visit Victor?
Now, Dee Dee,
have you sung to the FBI on this deal?
Oh, Betty,
you have, haven't you? I should have known you would. Victor will kill you.
Dee Dee, where are you going?
Where do you think I'm going? I'm going to find Victor.
Dee Dee!
Next floor, boys. Just hang on to the railing and you'll be okay.
Listen, I can't see anything.
That's just the idea of the goggles. Hang on to the railing. Okay, you up front. That's the last step. Follow that railing around.
Yeah. The railing.
Okay, stop here. Inside.
Inside where?
Come on, this way. Now sit down on the floor. Both of you.
Yeah, but what...
Sit down. Now, listen. I'm leaving one of my boys outside the door for 10 minutes. I want you to keep those glasses on and stay still. You get me?
Yeah, we get you.
Now, you've been pretty good boys, both of you. So here's a little something for your trouble. Don't spend it all in one place. Remember, 10 minutes. I'll see you.
You okay, John?
Yeah, Larry. You can take the glasses off. That 10 minutes routine was just a bluff.
Hey, look. He handed us $20 apiece.
Generous guy, isn't he?
Yeah. Where are we, anyway?
I'd say it's a condemned tenement house.
Well, let's get going.
Now, we better wait a few minutes anyway, just in case. Then I want to call the office and see if they followed the truck to the drop, okay?
Special Agent Dean.
Hello, Dean. John Humphrey.
Hello, John. Everything okay?
Yeah, fine. Where's the drop? Where'd they take the truck?
A small garage on Murray Street, number 653. Mac and James are keeping under surveillance.
I see.
Something's going wrong, though.
What?
Well, Ralph phoned a few minutes ago. He said Dee Dee accidentally found out he was singing and she's on her way to Victor.
Oh, no.
That's what he said.
Look, get hold of Mac and James. Tell them if she shows up at the drop to pick her up quietly and bring her in.
Right, okay.
Meantime, Service and I will try to locate her elsewhere. We've got to grab her before she sees Victor. If we don't, we'll never make that buyer.
Yeah, who is it?
Victor home?
No, he isn't. What do you want?
Look, I got business with him. I'm buying some stuff off him. Some stuff that just came in today.
Okay. He's down unloading the stuff. Now, listen.
Special agents of the FBI.
I don't care what you are. You can't come busting in here.
We're in. So you haven't seen Victor yet.
What's it to you?
It's plenty to us. You just come along, you'll find out.
Take your hand.
Oh, don't get stubborn.
Come on, let's go.
We're getting you out of here before Victor comes back and we have to carry you. You might just as well come along like a good little girl.
Now, in the doorway.
Hello, Mr. Service.
Step in here.
Look, I'm sorry I'm so late. I can't find Dee Dee any place. She must have gone to Victor. They must have skipped together.
Now, don't worry about Dee Dee. We've got her.
You have?
We found her at Victor's place before she had a chance to talk to Victor.
How do you like that, Mr. Service? Look what she does to me. After I give her the best years of my life.
Yeah, it's rough.
I could murder that Victor. But Dee Dee, I still love her. Ain't that strange? I could go back to her on bended knee.
Well, you've got a little something else to do for us first.
Yeah? What, for instance?
We'll know who the buyer is when he takes delivery. Then we can nail him.
Yeah, that's what a guy gets for buying merchandise with heat on it.
But we'll get Victor when he pays you off.
Yeah. I was thinking, is there any chance I could keep the money? After all, no, I guess not, huh?
You guessed right, Ralph. That's our evidence against the buyer. But you just wait till the job's finished. Now, where do you think your payoff will be?
I don't know. I got no idea.
We'll try to make it some public place, a bar maybe. Some place where we can watch the transaction and step in as soon as the change is made.
Hello, Ralph. How are you?
Oh, for crying out loud, Victor. How long do you want me to sit and wait for you?
How are things going, Ralph?
Come on, give me my end of the score. Let's get out of here.
What's the matter? Dee Dee waiting for you someplace?
What do you got Dee Dee so much in your mind for? Come on, pay off.
Now, look, Ralph. I could find a market for all the loads you line up.
There ain't going to be any more loads. I pushed my luck far enough.
You and Dee Dee going on a vacation?
I ain't seen Dee Dee in 3 days.
You haven't?
No, she run out of me.
Oh, no, that's too bad, Ralph. Ah, but here, this ought to cheer you up.
Thanks.
$2,875. It's all in that envelope.
Yeah, it better be.
Now I got a big piece of news for you, Ralph.
Yeah?
I got a wire from Dee Dee. She's in Atlantic City waiting for me. Here. How do you like that?
Yeah. I got a big piece of news for you. You're
going to
get
right, Victor.
Hey, what's going on here?
Special agents of the FBI.
So what?
Hey, you got to come.
Give me that.
Go on. Oh, I...
Beautiful, John.
Let me at him. I'll tear him apart. I'll break his back.
Okay, Ralph, now take it easy.
Stealing Dee Dee like that. Stealing a man's wife. I'll tear him apart.
He's had enough for now. Let him sleep this off.
Yeah, let him sleep this off.
All right, you people, stand back.
Come on, it's all over. There's nothing to see. Come on now, there's nothing to see. Hey, Mr. Service, you know something? I kind of like this working for the government. Hey, there must be something to this civil service business.
Sure, Ralph. There's a lot to it. You don't make much money, but there's always plenty of laughs.
That, Gangbusters listeners, was how this hijacking syndicate was broken up. The leader, his accomplices, and the buyer of the stolen merchandise were all tried in federal court and received the maximum penalties. It was the hard work of agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in skillfully using an informant that wrapped this case together.
Well, thank you, Assistant United States Attorney John C. Hilley, for this most amazing case history. And Gangbusters, congratulations to all the FBI agents who participated in this difficult investigation.
Tonight marks the 14th anniversary of Gangbusters in its crusade against crime. At this milestone, it is indeed a great pleasure to bring you a message from the Honorable James A. Pride, Chief of the Washington State Patrol.
Hearty congratulations to Gangbusters on its 14th anniversary of splendid service. The long history of the program and the enthusiastic response of listeners everywhere are proof of success. May this anniversary be more than a recapitulation of past accomplishment. May it mark a milestone of success, which may continue for many years to come.
And now the Whistler's strange story, Brotherly Hate.
Visiting hours were over. The Jeffrey Long Museum in San Francisco was quiet. And in the private office of the owner, Jeffrey sat at his desk, staring at the note in his hand. A note that was damp, almost wet with his own perspiration. The hands trembled and there was a tight, nervous feeling in the pit of his stomach. Symptoms of terror. It had all started 3 months ago when Jeffrey Long had received the first envelope while in Cairo. Then followed days and weeks of mounting fear. Because each Saturday thereafter, like a gentle stabbing before the final thrust, came an identical note, and the message was always the same.
If you kill Stell, you will die on the anniversary of her death.
And now it's Saturday again. The feeling of terror grows stronger, doesn't it, Jesper? The beads of perspiration on your forehead colder. Yes, because it's Saturday and tomorrow, Sunday the 17th is the anniversary of Estelle's death.
Yes?
Mr. Merton is here.
Thank you, Miss Grant. Send him in. Come in, Burton. Come in.
What's on your mind, Long?
You know why I called you. Sit down.
Want me to discover the lamp used by Rameses IV? Oh, what I do for money.
You're a private detective, aren't you? What about Estelle Blair's brother?
Look, if you didn't kill the girl, why worry?
So this brother, the one who's been sending me these letters, he's obviously a crackpot. He might do anything.
Call the police. They'll give you protection.
I tell you, he's got to be found. You've got to find him. Can't go around afraid of everyone I meet. Everyone from cab drivers to the caretakers here in my own building.
Listen, when I walked in here nearly a year ago with a hunk of a pirate and an alabaster cup that belonged to King Tut, you hired me like that.
Certainly.
Since then, I've been doing your dirty work. I've even swiped scarabs and jewel boxes for you all over the world. But murder's another thing, even for me. I want to know what I'm getting into, that's all. If you kill Estelle Blair, then I want to know about that. Blair?
I told you. The death was an accident.
And I'm telling you the result of my investigation. As far as I'm concerned, Estelle Blair never had a brother. Any time you decide to give out with what really got you scared, just dial my number.
You can't walk out on me now, Burton.
You can get another private
eye. No, no, there isn't time.
Like I said, when you're ready to tell me why you're so scared, just dial my number. But don't wait too long.
It turned out as you feared it would, hasn't it, Jeff? Yes. Burton, the private detective, hasn't been able to find Estelle Blair's brother. And now there's only one thing to do. You know there's too much to lose if you are murdered. The resultant investigation would certainly reveal the ugly facts surrounding your former assistant's death. You have immortality to lose, Jeff. Your name is the greatest private collector of Egyptology in the world. The proud name that shines brightly from the brass plaque on your great museum. The museum you intend to will to the city on your deck. Quickly, you get to your feet. Hurry to the small cabinet and take down a bottle marked poison. There is a way out, isn't there? A way you can preserve the honored name of Jeffrey Long.
Excuse me, Mr. Long.
Yes? What is it, Miss Gray?
You won't be needing me anymore this evening, sir. I thought I'd run out.
No, I won't be needing you, Miss Grant. You... No. On second thought, perhaps you'd better stay a few minutes. There is something you can do.
Yes, sir?
I'll call you.
As you walk back to your desk, you unscrew the cap on the bottle of poison. A Herculean force drags at your arm as you try to lift the bottle to your lips. Finally, you succeed. Your throat is numb as you take one swallow, then another, and another. Then a sudden stiffness seizes your hand. The bottle slips through your fingers. Slowly, you walk around the desk, slump into the chair. You wait a minute or so and then press the buzzer.
Come in, Miss Grant.
Mr. Long, is something the matter?
Yes, I made a terrible mistake. In the cabinet, two bottles almost identical. One contains cough medicine. The other, deadly poison.
Mr. Long, you didn't really take
it. Listen to me carefully, please. It was a mistake, do you understand? Be sure they know. They mustn't think otherwise. It wasn't suicide. Remember that. It wasn't suicide.
You're not going to die.
What?
I was afraid you'd do something like this. I poured the poison down the sink yesterday afternoon. What you drank is just colored water.
When you raised the bottle of poison to your lips, you thought it was the only way out, didn't you, Jeffrey? You would cheat Estelle Blair's brother, the man who had sworn to kill you, if you took your own life and make it appear as an actor. And you would preserve the honored name of Jeffrey Long. Then as you sat at your desk waiting for death, your secretary, Bernice Grant, informed you that you wouldn't die because she'd poured the poison out of the bottle the day before, replaced the deadly contents with harmless colored water.
I was afraid you'd try to kill yourself. You see, I've known about the letter.
You knew all along?
Yes. I've seen you see the worry in your eyes. Torture. But I couldn't let you do it.
I'll do it again. You or no one else can stop me.
No, no, you mustn't.
Please.
I can help you.
Please leave me alone.
Promise me you won't
leave me alone, Bernice. Please.
I want to help
you. I said.
You must find a Selby's brother. You can talk to him. Tell him it was an accident.
Yes. Yes, I couldn't tell him how she slipped. Fell off the boat. I could show him I wasn't to blame.
I'm sure I could find it. I know if you'll trust me.
No, it's impossible.
What if I told you I'd already located Estelle Blair's father?
What?
Yes. I learned about him the other day. He's living in the old men's home in Santa Cruz. I know if I can talk to him. Let me try.
Well,
you promised to try to keep him alive.
Sure you're not making all this up,
is it? I tell you, I know I can find a help for it. Promise me.
All right.
Then, go to the King's Hat Room in the basement. There's a telephone there and a couch. Stay there until I call you. I'll bring you some food later. Will you go?
Yes. If you say
so. And please, no matter what happens, you must trust me. You see, I love you, Jason.
Still numb with shock, you find your way down to the King Tut room, the large storage room filled with relics from the Valley of the Kings in Egypt. Without even taking off your tie, you lie down on the couch and drop into a deep sleep. You awake much later, and when you look at your watch, you see that it's Sunday morning, the morning of the day you expect to be killed. Your thoughts fasten on the tiny bit of hope Bernice gave you yesterday. You quickly reach for the phone.
Good morning. Messiah apartment.
Miss Grant, please.
Thank you. Hello?
Bernice, this is Jeffrey. Have you found anything more about Estelle's brother?
Not yet, but Jeffrey, I've made progress. I definitely know she had a brother. He's somewhere in San Francisco.
But today is the anniversary of Estelle's death. The day it's going to happen. I can't just wait.
But you must be patient, Jeffrey. At any moment, I may have some news.
What about the father in Santa Peralta?
Trust me, Jeffrey.
I know, but what did he say? What's the brother's name?
I don't know yet.
But the father, didn't he tell you?
I'm working as fast as I can, Jeffrey. You must believe that. I'll call you later, this afternoon. Maybe I'll have some very good news. Just wait and be patient, will you? Don't go out.
All right.
Remember
this. I will. I guess I should have known it long ago.
She convinces you to wait, doesn't she, Jeffrey? And you sit there quietly in the near darkness, trying to fight down your desire to run away and leave town. You're debating this when you hear footsteps in the direction of the stairs outside. You tense, nervously, staring at the door. Someone is coming, Jeffrey, into this room. Someone who moves quietly and has a key. You want to run, but the door is the only way, and then...
Good morning, Mr. Long.
Brothers, what are you doing here?
Bud Grady, the regular caretaker, is on his vacation, sir. I'm relieving him this week.
But this is Sunday. You're not supposed to be here on Sunday.
Miss Grant instructed me that you were here, sir, doing some special work. She asked me to bring this breakfast tray.
Oh. Oh, yes, of course, I didn't see it. Sorry, Claude.
It's all right, sir. Anything else?
No. No, nothing else. Thanks.
You watch him leave, stare at the food, suddenly realize you're unable to eat it or to even think of hunger. Your nerves are getting the best of you, aren't they, Jeffrey? And you decide to take a chance and drive to Santa Peralta yourself at once. Talk to Estelle's father. You're sure you can make it and be back before Bernice calls you. You're on the highway in 5 minutes, headed south. An odd feeling tells you that a car somewhere behind you has been making the very same turns and that it picked you up near the museum. You try to put it out of your mind when no attempt is made to catch up with you. Hours later, you pull up before an ancient stucco building bearing the sign, Santa Peralta Home for the Aged.
Well, who visited us so early? Oh, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome.
I'm looking for a man by the name of Blair.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Long, Jeffrey Long.
I'm sorry, Mr. Long. No one here but that name.
Well, maybe he's here under another name. He had a daughter named Estelle.
No one here with a daughter named Estelle.
A pretty girl, blonde. Tragically killed about 2 years ago at sea, the Mediterranean. She fell overboard.
Oh, pity. Yes. But I'm afraid you have the wrong place. We have only 10 gentlemen here, and I know their records very well. We've never had your Mr. Blair here in San Peralta.
You're sure?
Absolutely, Mr. Long.
Something has gone wrong, hasn't it, gentlemen? Bernice told you Estelle's father was in the old men's home at Santa Peralta, but apparently she was lying. Suddenly you look around you, find that you're driving through the Marina District, not far from the little cottage Estelle used to share with her mother in the days when Estelle was your assistant at the museum. You turn left, then right, and you see the house. Hardly recognize it after all these years. You stop and get out of the car and walk toward a tall woman who is watering the lawn next door.
Hello. It's a lovely day, isn't it?
If you like them hot, this is going to be a scorcher.
You live here long?
9 to 15 years. You're not a collector, are you?
Oh, no. No, I'm neither a bill collector nor a processor. An old friend of mine used to live next door.
Andrews, maybe?
No, the name was Blair.
Oh, then. Mother, big woman. Arms like the posts on that porch.
Well, the girl, Estelle, was my friend.
Sweet little thing, blonde as corn silk. She was killed, you know. Fell off a boat somewhere near Europe or Asia or somewhere like that. Worked for a museum.
Well, I've been trying to locate her brother.
Brother? I don't seem to remember any man in the Blair family. Seems like it was just Estelle and her mother.
Oh, I see. Well, I got to be going.
There was a girl, though, used to live with the Blairs, a friend of Estelle's. Dark girl, slim, about 5'2", trim little thing. Wore hair in a bun. You know, I used to say to my husband, Mac, that dark girl looks more like Mrs. Blair than Estelle does. I bet you they're sisters. I used to say to my husband,
Wait a minute.
Mac,
be quiet.
What?
The car. He went past me. Now it's turning around on the street.
Oh, no, Logan. What is it? What's the matter?
In your car, driving fast, you begin to pull away from the car and back again. Soon lose sight of it altogether. Slowing down, your mind stops racing too. And then it hits you, just something that woman back there said.
Dark girl, slim, about 5'2", trim little thing, wore hair in a bun. You know, I used to say to my husband, Mac, that dark girl looks more like Miss Blair than Estelle does. I bet you're sisters.
That's it.
sisters. Of course.
Yes, Jeffrey, that's it. An exact description of Bernice, your own secretary. Suddenly it all becomes very clear to you, doesn't it? You noticed it the first day she came to work for you. There was something familiar about her. She reminded you of someone, but you were never able to figure out who she was in. And now you know. You've been a fool, haven't you, Jeffrey? The way you've played into her hands. You're certain Bernice is Estelle's sister. And all the while, she's the one who's been sending the notes, intending to avenge her sister, Estelle. Back at the museum, you see no sign of the other car. But you're no longer worried about it, are you, Jeff? You're certain now that Bernice is your would-be assassin. You hurry inside and wait for her call. The hours drag by. And then...
Hello?
Jeffrey Dunn. I'm calling from a payphone in Drugstore and Grocery. Tell me what. You won't ask me what. Do as I say.
All right.
Jeffrey, I found the brother. He's going to try to kill you tonight. But he doesn't know where you are.
But you...
Be sure you keep all the lights out there in this.
Oh, yes, of course.
And don't call him. Don't tell anyone where you are.
No, of course.
I'll meet you there in half an hour. Don't call anyone.
Yes, I'm...
Goodbye. Done.
She's clever, isn't she, Jeffrey? She's maneuvered you on the very anniversary of Estelle's death. Into the basement of the museum where no one can hear a sound through the thick walls. But it's over for her now, isn't it? All over.
Burton Detective Agency, Burton speaking.
This is Jeffrey Long, Burton.
Oh? What now?
I know. I know who's been sending you those notes.
Yeah?
My secretary, all along. Bernice Grant.
What?
Yes. She's Estelle's sister. Now, you've got to help
me. Look here, Long. I've told you where I stand. Before I do anything, I have to know.
Are you prepared to go along with me? The whole way, if I tell you?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, even to doing away with some? Yes. It is necessary.
Anything for money. You know that.
All right. I still pushed her overboard. But she had it coming. I'll tell you about it later. Are you with me now?
Of course. I'll be right over.
You better bring along a man you can trust. Bernice is coming here to the King Cut Room in the basement in half an hour. She'll probably have a gun. Can I depend on you?
Don't worry about a thing. We'll meet you there.
It seems ages as you sit there in the dark waiting. Then when the illuminated hands on your watch point to 8:30, you hear Bernice come.
I'm here.
Oh, I've been so worried. See, let's turn on the light. Oh, I'm so tired, darling. I've been so worried.
Isn't this scary thing a little too far, Bernice?
Jeffrey, what do you mean?
How stupid do you think I am?
Jeffrey, what's this all about?
Still playing the game. Didn't you think I'd see through it all? You know, Bernice, I visited San Barbara. And as you know, Estelle's father has never been there.
I had to tell you something to keep you from doing away with yourself. It was all I could think of. Jeffrey, I've been working every minute, working for you. I asked you to trust me.
Trust you? You had me so worked up, I suspected everybody I ran into. Even thought it might be Carruthers, the caretaker. And in the car, I imagined someone was following.
You didn't imagine it. You were being followed.
What?
I was afraid you might go out. I called in the police, begged them to put a man on you.
Do you expect me to believe that? Can you give me that first?
Jeffrey!
So, you're carrying a gun. For what?
Jeffrey, it's for your protection. I was afraid he might find you here. Why are you pointing that gun at me?
See, Bernice, I know all about you. Found out from the woman next door to your old house in Marina. I know you were the one who wrote me those notes.
No!
I know Estelle never had a brother. I've discovered something even more interesting.
But it...
I've discovered that you, Bernice, the sweet secretary who said she loved me, you are the one who intends to kill me, because you're Estelle's sister. And that's why I'm going to kill you.
You watch Bernice standing against the wall, weeping. Everything is under control now, isn't it, sir? You're certain that you've outsmarted the girl you think is Estelle's sister. The girl you think wanted to kill you in vengeance for her sister's death. Now there's only one thing on your mind. To get out of the museum with Bernice and do away with it. You're tense, listening for the approaching footsteps which you know will be personal.
Thank heavens, he's coming. The detective I've had following you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bernice, you're wrong. That's someone I sent.
Chosen not to call on
you. I know you did. You wanted me all to yourself, didn't you?
You're out of your mind.
Ah, you in there?
Yes, in here, Burton.
Burton. Dick Burton?
Yes.
Come on out, Long.
Shall I bring Bernice?
No. Leave her there a while. Come on out alone.
Don't go, Jesse. I found out for sure
it's
this morning.
It's no use, Bernice. I fell for your lies for a long time.
Wait, please! Jeffrey, don't go! The police will be here soon! Dick Burton is a Estelle's brother!
Her brother!
For you, back in your own backyard, you'll see your castle in Spain, through your window pane, back in your own backyard. Oh, you can go to the east, go to the west, someday you'll come. Weary at heart, back where you started from. You'll find your happiness lies right under your eyes, back in your own backyard. Can go to the east, go to the west, someday you'll come, weary at heart, back where you started from. You'll find your happiness lies right under your eyes, back in your own backyard.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.